Good morning, everyone. Monday, April 7th, and here's the latest news. In a few moments, you will hear direct from our staff correspondents in London and Berlin, following which Earl Godwin will bring you his report from Washington. First, today, we take you to London.
This is London. Ed Doy speaking. The German mass formation push to force the Rupel Pass and spread out over the 2,000-year-old battlefield of the Macedonian plain was resumed with greater violence this morning. While hundreds of German dive bombers were raining explosives from the sky on the Greek defensive positions, heavy artillery poured forth an unceasing hail of shells. The Greek main defenses are said to be intact. It was officially stated in London that it is not yet known whether British forces have made contact with the invaders. Unconfirmed messages from Athens state that the Greeks shot down 18 German planes in the widespread raids yesterday. 7 German airmen who succeeded in bailing out were captured. No news has reached London direct from Yugoslavia since the Belgrade wireless went off the air yesterday evening. The papers fall back entirely on German and Italian announcements. Everywhere, the German operations are going according to plan. The line of attack, determined exclusively by geographical considerations, was doped out in advance by military experts all over the world. The British officers in Greece know the terrain well from the last war, but aerial attack has injected an unknown factor. It is hinted that the number of British troops in Greece, as reported from Berlin, Athens, and Ankara, are too high. German bombing operations in Greece may indicate that a new front will soon be opened. The concentrated raids on Syres and Drama and towns in between are considered significant. They show that the Germans want to wreck the only railway line connecting Macedonia with Turkey. This may be a preliminary to an attack from Bulgaria down into the Grecian Thrace near the Turkish frontier. The attack there has so far been held in abeyance to await the results of the initial onslaught on the Rupel Pass. There is only one passage in Hitler's dramatic declaration yesterday that reveals anything of German plans. He attacked the Serbian clique of criminals in Belgrade, but spared the Croats and Slovenes. This may mean he will also spare them from indiscriminate bombing. It certainly means that he intends to establish so-called autonomous Croat and Slovene states, much like Slovakia, while Serbia, if conquered, will become a protectorate like Bohemia and Moravia. On the East African front, South African troops are pursuing the retreating Italians from Addis Ababa towards Dessie. The vanguard of imperial forces are within 8 miles of Massawa on the Eritrean coast. The fall of that important port is expected within the day. All the papers play up the American promise of aid to Yugoslavia. Turkey's attitude is expected to be pronounced today. No immediate military intervention is anticipated. Demonstrations against the German invasion of Greece and Yugoslavia have been staged all over Bulgaria. There have been a number of arrests. Marshal Petain of France made a long-awaited speech today. He declared that France's honor forbade any action against her former ally. The Soviet-Russian position is arousing much comment. The Moscow radio last night did not read the German war communique for the first time since the outbreak of hostilities. The communiques from British and Italian headquarters were read. Moscow also made no reference to Hitler's proclamation to the German people. It also failed to mention the German declarations of war to Greece and Yugoslavia. On the other hand, special emphasis was placed on the British capture of Addis Ababa. The obvious inference is that Stalin chose this negative form of expressing displeasure at Hitler's extension of the war in the Balkans. And even though the war has started, the Moscow press keeps on referring to the Soviet-Yugoslav Pact of Non-Aggression as a striking, quote, peace document, unquote. The RAF attacked warships, supply ships, and troops in daylight yesterday. A German destroyer was torpedoed off the northwest coast of France and believed sunk. Another destroyer received a direct hit from a bomb. Last night, the naval base of Brest was again attacked in very bad weather. Other aircraft attacked the docks at Calais and Ostend. 3 planes are missing from the daylight attacks and 1 from the night attack. The shortage of newsprint has brought about a revolution in newspaper publishing. The Times today put up its price to 3 pence in an effort to cut down circulation. It announces that a waiting list has been opened to subscribers. Any cancellations will be filled strictly in rotation. The Daily Telegraph prints an appeal to its readers on the front page, asking them to hand on their copies of the paper to friends who may not have been fortunate enough to buy a copy. I return you now to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
That's the report from London at this time. Athens air raid alarm sounded in Athens shortly before noon today. No bombs fell. Next, a report direct from Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin. The big news of the day so far is the announcement by the Russian agency TASS of a non-aggression pact has been concluded between Yugoslavia and Soviet Russia. Comment is withheld on the Wilhelmstrasse as the details are not yet known. The Yugoslav minister in Berlin is now on his way to Switzerland, and that country will probably represent the interests of Yugoslavia during the war, as well as those of Germany in Yugoslavia. Greece will likely be represented by Argentina and Germany in Greece by Sweden. Pending the issuance of the German communique, the military news of the morning is that in all, 102 enemy planes were put out of action yesterday, including 4 British. Of these, 35 were brought down in the air against 7 Germans lost, and 54 were destroyed on the ground. Among the places attacked by the Germans and Italians were Belgrade 3 times, a railway junction, and numerous airports. The German advance, much of it in difficult mountain territory, is said to have penetrated in places far into enemy territory. And resistance was met in the Struma Valley on the way to the Greek city of Ceres, where the Greeks are said to have retired. Evidently, Bulgaria, Romania, and Hungary are considered as enemy territory, for it is reported that Sofia was bombed by anti-Axis planes, as well as some places in Romania. The war in northern Africa keeps right on, it is said. Comment on the British report that the landing of troops this time went on without a hitch is taken here as an indication that Greece lied when it denied the arrival of British troops there. The communique just out reports a 4th attack on Belgrade, this time at night, and speaks of fighting east of Benghazi in the African campaign. German planes yesterday sank 4 merchantmen for 16,000 tons in English waters and damaged 5 others. The British raided Western Germany and France last night, losing 3 planes. And in the Balkans, they dropped bombs on German territory in Styria. In all, 13 ships for a total of 52,000 tons were sunk and 14 damaged by German planes. The appearance of the Monday morning papers gives the German public its first opportunity, really, to study the various documents that were issued yesterday as the accompaniment of the long-expected German offensive against Greece and Yugoslavia. These included a statement read by Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop at an early morning press conference, a note to Greece, an official pronouncement in regard to Yugoslavia, and 2 memoranda. In going through these lengthy historic documents, which are Germany's justification for the action she has taken, I find 2 points that seem to me of special interest. It is now announced that at the time she signed the 3 Power Pact on March 25th, Yugoslavia was not only presented with the 2 notes, which it was expressly stated at the time were not to be considered as a consideration for her joining the Axis powers, but were an entirely distinct engagement on the part of the latter, and which guaranteed her sovereignty and territorial integrity, and undertook not to allow troops to enter her domain. But she was also given a promise of access to the Aegean Sea with the harbor and city of Salonika. In return, the pronouncement says, Yugoslavia was not to do more than assure her cooperation with the other European powers in the new ordering of the continent. The other point that interests me particularly is that the principal blame for the outbreak of open war in the Balkans is put on the British and their intrigues. There is only incidental mention of America in the accusations that are leveled against England and her assistant plotters, as they are considered here, in Greece and Yugoslavia. Whereas the papers last week were full of references to the United States as the situation in Bulgaria, in Belgrade, gradually grew worse and worse until finally Germany sent her armies across the frontiers into Yugoslavia and Greece. The papers that appear today are of course full of the big news, and their comments are biting enough, says the Völkischer Beobachter,
A government that makes breaking its word and faithlessness a principle is not fit to exist. The Essener Nationalzeitung says that advantage was taken of the love of peace and the patience of Adolf Hitler in Belgrade and Athens. The Zwölferblatt believes that Germany was betrayed by Yugoslavia and calls it the Judas of Europe. The Pommersche Zeitung insists that any ally of England, the cynical foe of Europe, will be destroyed with it. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
And now, here is Earl Godwin speaking from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. Just as a tag on that Berlin broadcast, Secretary Hull has denounced Germany's invasion of Yugoslavia and Greece as barbaric. And the congressional investigation into why the strikes is scheduled to start this morning up on the House, up on Capitol Hill. I wouldn't expect any rabbit to be pulled out of a hat up there, because the investigation is merely the slow start of one half of the double-barreled investigation the House launched last week after growing a bit weary of hearing from home. The Military Affairs Committee and the Naval Affairs Committee of the House were told to go to it and examine the defense program, each in its own area, Navy for the Naval Affairs and Army for the Military Affairs, the accent to be right now on strikes. Only one vote in the House was cast against that investigation, just one, Representative Mark Antonio of New York City, and all he had to say was contained in one 30-second speech. Half a minute it was. He charged the investigating committee would be a strike-breaking organization. Well, today, Representative Andrew Jackson May, chairman of the House Military Affairs Committee, has started the thing and has asked the appearance of Secretary of Labor Perkins and one or two others, like John Biggers, who is Bill Knutson's production assistant, to try to get at the bottom fundamentals of the strike situation first. Representative May, by the way, is a mild-mannered gentleman who reminds the old-timers of Sir Henry Irving, as far as looks is concerned. He's one of those old-time prosecutors from the courthouses back in the hills of Kentucky, and you might know what they are. Old-fashioned gentlemen who still wear broad-web suspenders and can look a rifle-bearing moonshiner right smack in the eye, and we've got one from Tennessee over in the office of the Secretary of State right now, too. Well, meantime, today, the CIO comes out on its own side, comes out with a blast against all the big operators of mines and factories. That is, all except the U.S. Steel, whose strike will be settled before it starts. At least so the whisper goes around Washington before breakfast this morning. We may see whether the whisper's right or not. But anyhow, the CIO charges that the coal miners' action closed the mines, that it's a lockout, not a strike, that the Ford and Bethlehem troubles could be averted if those two big employers would recognize the national labor laws. And they charge also that the Alice Chalmers long tie-up has most of its blame on the government doorstep. And how they do blast away at Secretary of Navy Knox and Production Chief Knudsen for asking the men to go back to work while negotiations were still going on. That's the CIO side. Meantime, the Defense Mediation Board, on its mettle, unlocks its doors, takes a breath of fresh air without cigar smoke, and announces that at long last, again, the Alice Chalmers strike is off. If the men okay the agreement reached there, it'll be okay. The major part of the coal strike statements seem to be stalemate, seem to be wiped out. Washington exerts pressure, and a contract has been drawn between management and men, but the northern mine owners might accept it, but the southern mine owners balk. However, the northern mines produce half the coal, the southern mines about 35% the coal, and Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's the news from Washington at this time.
And that's the news at home and abroad up to this moment. During the past quarter hour, you've heard direct from our reporters in London and Berlin, and from Earl Godwin in Washington. This is the National Broadcasting Company.